I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kylie Camps, owner of The Kind Parenting Company, wife, proud mum of twin boys, and happiness advocate. This podcast is a place for women who want more from life. It's your time to cultivate more self-care, compassion, happiness, love, and confidence. Let's have real conversations to help you feel better, choose better, and live your best life. Welcome to episode 25. I think you're going to really enjoy today's episode. It's chatty, but it's also really informative, and it's a topic that I'm very, very passionate about and really trying to learn more about and also implement into my life. But before I tell you about the episode and our guest, I wanted to take just a quick moment to thank today's podcast sponsor. So for someone who owns an online business and spends a lot of time in front of a screen, my Baxter Blue glasses are truly an essential part of my daily and evening routine. Most of us these days are using screens far more than we probably care to admit, from our desktops to our phones to our tablets, our TVs. We're often looking at a screen. And screens are great, don't get me wrong, I love technology, but we also need to protect ourselves. And one super simple, easy way to take care of your eyes is to invest in a pair of non-prescription glasses to filter blue light from digital devices. Now, blue light is the harmful light that is emitted from our digital devices, from the screens. This light can cause our eyes to strain, it can make us feel fatigued, and it can give us headaches as well. Baxter Blue glasses bring relief to headaches and sore eyes by filtering out 50% of that harmful blue light. Their lenses also include a premium anti-reflective coating to reduce glare and provide better contrast when using your digital screens. Now, glasses are a very big trend, and they have been for a while now, and they're not going anywhere. Whenever I film a story wearing my glasses, I'm always inundated with direct messages asking where I purchased them from. And they are always Baxter Blue. The whole range is really stylish. I personally have the Lane in Maple Tortoise and also the Lane in Gloss Black. I like to keep a pair upstairs next to the bed and another pair downstairs in the office next to my desktop. They even have mini pairs for the kids. Super cute. I 10 out of 10 recommend them, and what's even better is that every time a pair of Baxter Blues are purchased, as a company, they donate another pair of reading glasses to someone who is in need and does not have proper access to eye care through their Pair for a Pair pledge with Restoring Vision. It's really inspiring to know that companies out there like Baxter Blue are truly creating amazing products, but they also care and they're giving back in a really big way. Their initiative is changing people's lives, and they are a company that I'm truly proud to align with. Jump over to www.baxterblue.com.au or their Instagram, which is simply @baxterblue_, and take advantage of my discount code, which is Kylie10, KYLIE10, all in capitals, and save 10% off your order. And save your eyes from all of the aches and strains. It can even improve your sleep quality, which you know I am all about. So make sure you jump over and check out Baxter Blue. I hope you enjoy this episode. My guest today, or I should say this evening, is a little ray of sunshine. She's one of those people that you meet and straight away you can't help but feel drawn to. I actually met her at our beach exit one afternoon or one morning, I can't remember, and it's been a pleasure getting to know her a little bit. I knew that we would have to sit down and record a podcast because she has so much to share with other women when it comes to living with joy, being present, and practicing mindfulness. Amy Sinclair is a yoga and meditation teacher. She's a dog mum, and she's about to become a mum to a human baby. She's due to have her first baby this October, and she has the world's cutest bum. So, Amy, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your evening, particularly given that you're not actually a night person, neither am I. We were just saying this may be a struggle, but we will get through it. But thank you so much for setting aside the time to be here. And before we dive in, can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, of course. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful. As you mentioned, as a yoga and meditation teacher, I help people to ultimately cultivate a deeper connection with themselves through self-acceptance and self-awareness, but also help them to better understand the connection between body, mind, and spirit and the important role that that plays in their lives.
And that's such a huge undertaking, I can imagine.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's really, really interesting. So that's what you do now. What drew you to wanting to become a yoga and meditation teacher? Was there a moment in life where you just felt, okay, I'm called to do this, or, you know, were you born super enlightened?
I certainly am not, wouldn't consider myself to be enlightened even now. It's such a great question. I think even as a little girl, I've always been a seeker, always felt deep down that there's more to life than what I was experiencing and seeing with my physical senses.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of was always in touch with the energetics of things, and particularly sensitive to other people and their energies as well. And I didn't really have any role models that I could talk to about this, and no one could answer the questions that I had about life and what I was sensing and feeling an overload of. And when I was 14, my mum took me to my very first yoga class. And I remember it like yesterday. It was in a little attic of this beautiful woman's home upstairs, this A-frame little room. And she walked up with so much grace and lightness. She kind of just floated into the room wearing all these white robes. And she had long grey hair that was plaited down her back.
So like the typical, what you envision when you think of it. Yeah, absolutely.
She was that. And surprisingly, I don't remember a lot about the actual asana practice, the physical practice of the class,
mm-hmm.
but I do remember the final posture at the end called Shavasana or relaxation. And there was something about what happened or what I felt in that pose that changed me forever, and I wanted to experience more of it. It was finally, I felt like I was in touch with what I was looking for so long.
It was that alignment.
Mm-hmm.
At 14.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember driving home saying to my mom, like, I don't know what that was, but I want more of that feeling right at the end.
Wow.
There was something special there. And so she then started to take me to meditation circles.
And so your mum was already practicing yoga and meditation?
Yeah, yeah. She was already attending this. She'd always been kind of that way inclined.
Yeah.
And so she was a really good role model in that sense. And then I started kind of just delving into that world as a 14-year-old, but then life gets in the way. You become a teenager.
Yeah, of course.
And so I kind of forgot about it for a little while in the whirlwind that is being a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 18, I moved to the Gold Coast, long story before that, but got quite unwell and was doing everything I could to enhance my health, and yoga practice was one of them.
And so it came back to the surface for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even 18 is quite young to really, you know, feel connected to your calling.
Yeah, I felt it quite strongly, but had been searching for my calling for so long.
Right, and so you underwent training at 18?
No, I practiced for many years, a good maybe 4 years before I did my training, delving into the so many different styles of yoga as well. And so I was just kind of experimenting with what my favorite style was.
And what is your favorite style?
I have a few, but my number one would be a Hatha or Vinyasa-based practice.
Okay.
Yeah,
break it down for me.
Vinyasa is a Sanskrit word. It basically means movement with breath.
Okay.
So it's kind of a very flowy, meditative, moving practice where each
breath. Amy's flowing as she says this. She's so graceful.
I'm like, That would be probably my pick, yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And so then that's evolved, obviously, into also working in the space of meditation and mindfulness, in particular for women.
Yes. Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So something that I noticed when I read your bio on your website, which is Love from Amy, is that you have a really, really clear life motto that you live by. And that life motto is, I keep my body healthy, my heart full, my mind open, and my hugs strong. I can vouch for the strong hugs. You are a hugger and I love it. And you do have just an amazing, incredible outlook and attitude in life. So let me ask, how does this actually translate for you in your everyday life? Like, how do you bring that life motto, that value to fruition? You know, is it down to your daily habits? Like, how do you live and breathe that?
A really good question. And it's exactly what you just said. It's through daily routines and rituals and habits to the point where I don't feel like it's a habit anymore. It's just a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you share this philosophy as well, in that I really believe that our health is our number one asset. Without that, we can't live life to the fullest. We really can't live to our potential if we don't have that first and foremost. So just like yourself, I do everything I can to better enhance my overall well-being through physical exercise and movement, as well as what I nourish my body with food-wise. And also thought-wise, and the information that I choose to consume, the people I choose to spend my time with, all matters immensely.
All connected.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of your habits, your daily habits that serve you?
There's so many, but number one is meditation,
mm-hmm.
Or even just a simple mindfulness breathing exercise. Movement is paramount
mm-hmm.
every single day, whether it's just a simple beach walk, it doesn't have to be huge. Or yoga or a workout at the gym.
Do you plan how you're going to move, or do you do that intuitively and just based off the energy that you're feeling that day?
Exactly, okay. Very much intuitively. I do try to stick to a routine, but really my meditation helps me to tap into what it is that my body needs in that moment, because each day is different.
Mm.
Some days it just needs rest, and that's just a simple beach walk or a sit under a tree.
Yeah, which I think is really powerful, because I know myself, I'm a I can be a scheduler, and I'll be like, I'm going to go to the gym four times a week.
Yeah.
And there have been times when I'm at the gym and I'm like, you know what, this actually isn't what I need right now. I would have been better off to take that casual beach walk, or to have a life pause and just surrender for half an hour.
Yeah.
So meditation helps you personally to feel more in touch with what you need.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like meditation is a hot topic at the moment. You know, everyone is very big on, you know, sharing that they meditate. And anytime you listen to an interview with anyone who's successful, meditation is part of their daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that a lot of mums in particular aspire to meditate. But for a lot of us, it can feel like this big, ambiguous, I guess, task that we don't know how to do, or something else on our to-do list. So how would you, one, explain meditation, and two, how would you suggest people could start introducing it into their life without it feeling like a chore?
Yeah, a really big and beautiful question that I think is really warranted. And I do feel like that almost presents the biggest reason why most people don't get started with meditation practice, is that they either feel like they don't have time, or that they're a failure and they just can't quiet their mind.
That they do it wrong.
Yeah. Which is so common.
Yeah.
But going back to where can someone start, or what exactly is meditation, I think it's important to kind of address the fact that when you stop to sit in a place of stillness, usually the first thing that we do is we set our alarm on our phone for 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell ourselves that during that time, I'm not going to think, like, okay, brain, just stop thinking.
Which Impossible, right?
Impossible.
Okay, yeah. Good. It's impossible.
So that's the number one takeaway I'd love people to be reminded of, and it should offer some relief in that knowing that your mind thinks involuntarily in the same way that your heart beats involuntarily.
So you're not doing it wrong if you sit down and you have thoughts come in?
No.
Yeah.
No. If anything, that is the practice. The practice is to sit and to simply be with your thoughts. So in the Tibetan language, the word mindfulness actually means to become familiar with. And that is to become familiar with yourself and your own thoughts and the inner workings of your mind. And to ultimately develop a non-judgmental practice where you witness those thoughts coming, but then you practice letting them go.
So being more of an observer of your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And then with practice, there will be spaces, really delicious pauses between the thoughts that come and go. But that's with practice, and it takes time, just like a yoga practice or any kind of practice. So I think it really helps to remember that. It's just like if I was to ask you right now, think of anything, Kylie, think of anything other than a polar bear with pink polka dots. Whatever you do, think of
it. You're
going
to go straight to the polar bear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the same thing happens. We sit down, like, okay, mind.
Don't think.
Be still.
Don't think.
Yeah. And then we're like, oh, there's a truck outside. That was a really loud truck. Oh, no, now I'm thinking about a truck. I suck at meditation. I quit.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really helpful to be like, no, the moment where the magic happens is where you acknowledge that, oh, I just got carried away on that mental field trip with that thought just now. Come back to the breath.
And I'm going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a beautiful quote. I think it's a Buddhist quote that says, leave the doorway of your mind open for thoughts to come and go, but just don't invite them in for tea.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So don't get carried away with them. Don't get lost in them. If you can help it, that's the practice.
That's so important to remember, because I think in this day and age where we do have access to everything really quickly, people want to be great at things straight away. So they want to sit and be the master of it. But that's not actually going to serve you. You need to practice.
Yes. And I think because meditation, there's so much hype around it, and it is seemingly so simple, that people just assume that they are able to do it with ease. And then when it's not so easy, they give up or feel like they're failures.
Yeah. Or it doesn't work for them.
Yeah, exactly. But it just takes practice, just like everything else.
And when it does come to practicing and starting, is there an optimum time? Like you suggested, setting your phone alarm for 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But is there, you know, is it best to do it at the start of the day, at the end of the day, or is it, you know, whenever you can?
Yeah, I personally think the morning is the best way to start. But I am a morning person as
well. Yeah, so am I. Because I'm like, well, of course it's the morning, but everything should be done in the morning.
Yeah. But really, I think a moment where you can sit and not be distracted. So whatever time that is available for you, I know for busy moms it's hard to schedule that time. And just coming back to that note on time, I think for a lot of us, especially moms, we can view the practice of meditation as like this, like a luxurious pedicure for our minds, you know, that I can only get around to when I have time.
Yeah.
But
it's a luxury, not an everyday essential.
Yes.
So it's changing up the script of going, no, actually, this is going to fill my cups up so much more and getting in the practice. And I read a quote recently that was saying, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of meditation, if you can't make 5 to 10 minutes for yourself, that's your own fault. Like, you're in your own way. Like, it's literally just setting your alarm 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah. And it's amazing. It's incredible that the impact that that has on not only you and your well-being, but therefore everyone else that is touched by your impact that day, simply by you filling up your cup first so that you can give from the overflow and not be so depleted.
Yeah.
And it really is a matter of, it's like investing 2% of your day to make the other 98% better.
Yeah, when you explain it like that, it seems like a pretty easy, reasonable trade-off.
And if you're really short on time, it could be a minute. It could be 60 seconds of just me time. There's another saying where if you don't have 20 minutes to meditate, you need to take an hour to meditate, because it's just it's that important.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And so there are obviously different types of meditation, from
guided to
mindfulness meditations, to Vedic meditation. Yeah.
And would you suggest, say you're just starting out, would you suggest that someone tries all different kinds, or would you suggest that you commit to one kind to get a feel for it?
Yeah, personally, just from my own practice as well, I think a really good place to start is with a mindfulness meditation or a guided meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some really beautiful apps out there that can guide you into that space, especially for people that really struggle with the slowing down of their mind or just sitting in stillness. It can be really nice to be guided. And that's what I used for many years, actually, before I was kind of brave enough almost to just sit with my own thoughts in silence.
Well, I guess a guided meditation kind of takes off the pressure as well. Like, you would still have your other thoughts come in, mm-hmm. but it would make it easier
to come back.
Because I know myself, if I'm having trouble sleeping, then I'll sometimes do a guided meditation before I sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I just do that through Spotify. I'll just have a search on the playlist and pick one.
Perfect.
And it's super easy.
Mm. That'd be a great place to start. And don't overwhelm yourself with needing to sit for too long at one period of time as well. I would suggest maybe 10 minutes if you're just starting out. Only because the first 5 minutes is usually when you're kind of just regathering yourself, your mind's still wandering.
Yeah, going through the mental checklist, the laundry yes, list of all
exactly.
the things that we're doing.
Yeah, what you're having for dinner, or wherever your mind
yes,
tends to go.
Pick up everything.
Everything. And so after the first five, that's when you're like, oh, you tend to start to drop back into that parasympathetic nervous system. Your mind starts to relax, your body calms down, and then you can drop into that deeper state of well-being. It only takes 30 to 45 seconds of meditation before your body will actually start releasing dopamine and serotonin, the bliss chemicals.
Which is amazing, because we all have that within us. You know, like, and that's what's the wild thing is we all have that. At our event that we had recently, Brad Fennell was one of our speakers, and he just like for a minute asked everyone to just drop into themselves, just I guess spend a minute kind of guiding us through some deep breaths and coming back to our core.
Mm-hmm.
And there was 160 women, and everyone, to my knowledge, did it. And just the shift in the room afterwards, it was like a totally different space after that 1 minute. And this is what's crazy to me is it's within us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can access it. It's just getting out of your own way.
Exactly. And that's my favorite part about meditation. I'm so glad that you brought that up, is that it is actually a practice of accessing our own internal well, our internal source of bliss and fulfillment that is only accessible from that place within us. And it's all the great teachers have taught us that over the last thousands and thousands of years, is that the kingdom of heaven is within.
It's just such a beautiful thing, but it's so easy to lose touch with.
So easy to lose touch
with. And if you're not, like, you know, we spoke about, if you don't have that role model to show you that, it is easy to be bombarded and overloaded and look outward
mm-hmm.
for solutions.
Yes.
You know, whether that's a superfood supplement, whether it's a sleeping tablet,
yeah.
medication or whatever it is, or looking to fill a void with eating or overtraining or a relationship,
mm-hmm.
we are all too often looking outward when really
should be looking inward. Mm-hmm.
And so you mentioned mindfulness as well. And mindfulness is a really, really big topic. And it's something I know a lot of mums really, and just women in general, aspire to bring more of into their life, because we are constantly bombarded. We have our phones. We have so much stuff coming at us mm-hmm. all the time. So many thoughts. When it comes to mindfulness, how do you tap into having more mindfulness in your everyday?
Mindfulness is such a beautiful tool to bring our awareness back into the present moment. In fact, anyone, we could do it right now in this moment, irrelevant of what you're doing. Like, if we were to all just take a really slow conscious inhale breath all together as one, and then an equally long and slow exhale breath. And this time, as you breathe in, just feel the tactile sensation of the cool air as it enters in through your nostrils and brushes down the back of your throat. Feel how it dances around your rib cage and your belly. And then as you breathe out, feel the tactile sensation of that breath exiting the body and the effect it has on your being.
The It's so simple.
So simple. And we carry it with us everywhere we go, our breath. It's just a matter of becoming aware of it and going, hey, I'm a human being, not a human doing.
Yes, and I had this conversation with a girlfriend recently because she had seen an osteopath,
mm-hmm.
and the osteopath was saying to her, you're not breathing correctly. Like, you're just breathing short and shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. We just get into that habit and we carry tension and stopping to, like, we just don't tune in to really feeling our breath.
Yeah, exactly. And it said that we utilize in our day-to-day lives just 20% of our lungs capacity.
Wow.
So just to stop and be really conscious about your breath in general is a beautiful practice to start with, mindfulness-wise.
Mm.
But if you think about the power of your thoughts as well, as you know, we think around 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day.
Mm-hmm.
But the crazy thing is, of that, 90% of those thoughts are the same thoughts that we thought yesterday and the day before that just come from our subconscious programming and our habitual habits.
Yes.
So if those thoughts aren't serving us, it's very difficult to make change in our life. So the practice of mindfulness to me, how I bring it into my life, is to become really aware of the thoughts that I'm thinking or how I'm feeling in any present moment in time, so that I can then make a change so that those thoughts can better serve me and therefore everyone that I'm interacting with.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so powerful, such a...
I love it. And I know for myself, a habit that I got into was being mindful as soon as I wake up. And it's not a big practice, but it's just feeling where I am. So it's feeling like my heels touching the bed, yeah. and then like my calves touching the bed, and like just being really aware of the weight of my body when I wake up and things like that. It really changes on the days that I really focus on it versus the days that I just jump out of bed and hit the ground running.
Yeah.
You do have much more of a sense of calmness. And it's the same for me, something that I do when I'm brushing my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that is my little mindfulness moment. Even though I'm brushing my teeth, but it's like really tuning into, okay, like I'm brushing the back too. Like really just being super present. Because sometimes I have the excuse that I don't have time to sit down and be super mindful,
mm-hmm.
but just bringing real mindfulness into different tasks.
Yes.
And I recently spoke with Dr. Libby Quinn, and she was saying being mindful in any given moment, like you mentioned, the power that that has to change, just like you said, not just you, but how your kids mm-hmm. feel in that moment too. Mm-hmm. And she actually said to really look at your kids as if it's the first time you're looking at them and the last time.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, exactly what you just did. Like, oh, like that's powerful. And that can be a lot of pressure as well because, you know, that's a lot of pressure for mums to think that way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can have moments of your day of really looking, you know, like really taking in what's around you, that intense gratitude for what you have
is everything.
It's going to be amplified.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a question that I get asked a lot is about staying calm with kids. And for me, it's gratitude. And that's steeped in mindfulness, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. you can't be grateful if you're not mindful and aware of what you've got to begin with.
Exactly. Gratitude practice is so powerful, mm-hmm. so important. I call it a superpower. And I think because it's another one of those things that seems so simple and a little bit the hippie dippy woo-woo kind of side of the fence. So it can be looked at, oh yeah, that gratitude thing.
Mm.
But actually believe it or not, there's a job that he's called a happiness researcher. How cool is that?
That's really cool.
Such a cool title. Sean Acor's name is, and he was talking about the benefits of gratitude in terms of productivity levels and exemplifying that for your kids as well and how that rubs off on them. There's so much power, and it really is a mindfulness technique. And imagine if we'd all taught our children to think of three things that they're grateful for every single day and to express that out loud.
It's so powerful. I had a question come through on Instagram, and it was saying, how can I make my kids be more grateful?
Mm-hmm.
And my response was, you can't force them to be grateful, but what you can do is model, like mm-hmm. just role model gratitude. And, you know, we don't always get it exactly right as parents, but I know that something I've always taken pride in is trying to model gratitude. And even recently when one of our little boys broke his leg on the way to the hospital, he said, Mum, we're so lucky that we can drive to a hospital. And I'm like, yes, like, that's yes, he's listening.
Mm.
Because even in moments of, you know, say we're trying to get out the door and I drop a mug and it smashes and I go to clean it up, I'll always make an effort to look at it and go, oh, that's the universe looking out for me. I wasn't meant to be on the road at that time. And so I'll say things to the boys. I'll be like, that's so good. Like, yeah. This is the universe making sure we get in the car when we're meant to get in the car.
What a blessing.
Yeah, what a blessing, you know. you know, you got to choose how you look at things.
Mm-hmm.
But role modeling that gratitude for the things that come my way
mm-hmm.
has just paid off with the kids. Like, you know, they're normal kids and they have their moments of being ungrateful for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll surprise me by saying little things, you know, or, Mum, isn't it amazing that we can hear the ocean? Yes, it is. It's so cute.
It's so beautiful and so powerful. Yeah. And to instill that in them so young as well, I think it's only going to ripple greater and greater as they get older as well.
Well, it has to, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big.
It is really big.
So with mindfulness and meditation,
mm-hmm.
again, coming back to the beginner, we're going to suggest 10 minutes of a morning. Because we're morning people. We're totally not biased. And just being more mindful throughout the day.
Yes.
That's a good place to start.
A great place to start. But if you're really new to meditation and it scares you, the thought of sitting in stillness,
mm-hmm.
a really great analogy I like to use or I teach my students is that if you imagine, I find this really helpful, if you imagine yourself standing on the corner or the edge of a busy street and you're watching the cars go by, and each one of those cars is a thought in your mind.
Yeah.
And know that some days it will be bumper to bumper traffic with just no gaps between the cars, and other days there'll be a car pass by, it will keep driving, and then there'll be a long pause before the next one. And then before you even know it, without you realizing it, a car will stop, the door will open, and some beautiful being will usher you in, and then you'll end up like 17 blocks down the road before you realize, I was supposed to just remain on the sidewalk. I gotta get out of the car.
Oh my gosh, what a powerful way to look at it.
Isn't it?
Helpful. Automatically though, that takes the stress out of wanting to do it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel. I'm like, oh, that's actually achievable.
Totally. And it's the magic happens in that moment that you're like, oh, I should have been on the sidewalk. I just got into this car.
Silly me.
Silly me. Let me get out. Start again. I'll come back to my breath.
Yes.
I'll watch those thoughts. Some people like to use the analogy of the sky.
Clouds in the sky. Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
I like the cars. It just seems to be.
Because it's taking you somewhere, I guess. It's an easy concept to understand.
Which is what thoughts tend to do. They carry us. They're like little dictators in our mind. You know, tell us where to go, what to see, what to say, how to look. How to respond.
How to engage, to disengage.
Exactly. Yeah. They're so powerful. If we don't have control over them, they have control over us. There's a great saying, again, I don't know who said it, but the mind is a beautiful servant but a dangerous master.
I love that.
A beautiful servant, a dangerous master.
Mm. That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's just a training our mind to work for us. Rather than working for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I love it. Now, I also read about your 10 seconds to happiness exercise. And I was wondering if you could unpack that for our listeners and explain what that means.
I love this exercise. It makes me so happy just to think about it. But yes, I came across it while reading Tim Ferriss's Tools for Titans book.
I love Tim Ferriss.
Oh, he's so amazing.
Yeah.
And I started practicing this exercise. He called it the happiness hack. And all you do, you can do it anywhere, anytime, is you pick two people within your vicinity that you can see. They can be complete strangers, just anyone like the construction workers
that are making it very difficult
for me to focus. Anyone that you can see. And if there's no one in your current vicinity that you can see, just think of someone that you know, or even the girl that served you coffee this morning, or the checkout chick at the supermarket, whoever it is. Pick two people and just mentally wish them happiness, wish them well. So I just wish you happiness. You don't have to say anything to them. Don't acknowledge them in any way. Just in your mind's eye, wish them well.
Mm.
And you'll notice there's a physiological state change that happens in your own being in that moment. where you start to cultivate those feelings of happiness within yourself. And if you're anything like me, you'll start out with two people, but then you'll do it with everyone.
You're just dropping it all over the town.
Yeah. And then you'll bless yourself. And, yeah, it's such a beautiful, beautiful practice that really helps you to cultivate, again, that well of happiness that exists within you by simply sending it to another.
And I guess that really comes back to so many of us struggle with self-care for ourselves, but not so much with other people. So it's like, okay, to get to that point of bringing that happiness to the surface for yourself, if you can almost give yourself permission to give it to other people, it's like a byproduct that you're going to feel that for yourself as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So particularly for, you know, women who are continually told about, you know, we have to give, we have to give, we have to give. That can be a really nice way, I guess, to bring it to the surface for them in a way that doesn't feel like there's friction. Yeah, that they're going or they're doing something wrong.
Yes.
Because they're trying to tap into that well of happiness for themselves. I love that. Now, we've kind of already touched on misconceptions of meditation. Would you say that there are any other things that people really struggle with when it comes to meditation, or is it more just the shutting off?
I think definitely the quieting of the mind is the biggest barrier to people starting and also not feeling like they have the time. But going back to the time piece on that note, I just want to say if people understood the benefits, I know it sounds crazy, but you take 10 minutes out to dedicate to yourself, the compounding effect of that actually gives you time back, because when you meditate, you actually access a very verifiable fourth state of consciousness, which is very different to the waking, the sleeping, the dreaming state. And in that state of consciousness, your body goes into a state of deep healing rest, which they say is 2 to 5 times deeper than sleep.
Wow.
Yeah, so meditate, like if you invested 15 minutes of meditation into your day, if that gave you 45 minutes, let's just say, back in sleep, then you've already made your time back, because you can have 45 minutes less sleep that night because you did a 15-minute meditation that day.
Yeah, see, I love how practical that sounds.
Mm.
That appeals to, like, the logical brain in me that's like, you know what I mean, like the taskmaster.
Yes.
So where you can mentally make that trade-off of going, yeah, I am going to commit 10 to 15 minutes of doing it, but look what I'm getting in return.
Yes, and not only do you get deeper sleep, you're more productive at work, so you get your work done faster, you're much more focused. There's so many benefits that come from just a short meditation practice that it's just not worth not doing, if that makes sense. And so I think that's where addressing the time piece comes in. You really do just invest 2% of your time to greatly enhance the other 98% of your day. And like you were saying before, if you can fill up your own cup first in that way, then you can be fully present when you come home to your kids in a much greater way as well. You can be much more present in your relationships. The people that are around you are all going to benefit from that ripple effect of that little bit of time that you dedicated that morning to yourself.
Just showing up a little more.
Your own nourishment.
Yeah. Now, I also know that you love a good book. Off the top of your head, what books would you recommend? Like, say you had to choose 2 to 3 books that are like a must read for someone who is interested in reconnecting with themselves more. I know I've put you on the spot.
You have.
And he's like, that wasn't on the question list, Kylie.
No, there's so many good ones. Definitely anything by Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Yeah.
Becoming Supernatural. Or I really love
Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Which is a, like, for me, I'm still reading it.
It's a deep book.
It's a heavy book. I have to read like 3 pages at a time, maybe. And then I have to like really think about what I've read.
Yes.
And then often go back and read it, because it's like I love everything he's saying, and it makes total sense. But at the same time, it's mind-blowing.
It's totally mind-blowing.
Yes.
It's huge. And I've read it twice now, and still I feel like I need to go back and read it again. But it's definitely a really good place to start if you're interested in the world of meditation and quantum physics and mindfulness. Yes.
And his guided meditations are really good as well.
They're great.
Yeah.
Everything that he does, I highly recommend following him. And there's one more. My favorite meditation teacher is called Emily Fletcher. She's written a book called Stress Less, Accomplish More, meditation for high performance or high achievers, one of those.
If we Google Emily Fletcher, we can put it in the show notes. Yeah.
It's brilliant. And it actually teaches you step by step how to start a meditation practice, what mantra to use. She recommends using a mantra.
Do you personally use a mantra when you practice?
I do, yeah.
Is it true that you don't tell anyone your mantra? Is that true?
If you practice transcendental meditation, yes, it's a law that you don't tell anyone.
Got it.
There is a common one in her book that everyone can access, and that really is just the word 100, O-N-E. This is what happens when it gets late.
I know, we're normally asleep.
But yes, I do love to use a mantra. In Sanskrit, the word man means mind and trap means vehicle. So it's a mind vehicle that's specifically designed to de-excite the nervous system to help you to access that parasympathetic state of relaxation and healing, deep nourishing rest. So it is a really powerful tool. But if you're just starting out, I find it can be a little bit intimidating. And a nice place to start is just simply coming back to your breath, using that analogy of the cars maybe, or a guided meditation. And then once you feel a little bit more confident, then you can get
into your toes into some other guides. Awesome. And now, before we finish up, there was just one other thing I wanted to add in. I wanted to touch on a post that I actually read on your Instagram account about you and your lovely husband, Ryan, making a really powerful pact to one another when it comes to the way you choose to speak about other people when you're not in their company. I read this post and I was like, wow, that's, I love the pledge. So tell us all about it.
It's a big practice. So we made an agreement with each other,
which we should just say, like, Ryan's great and he's very into optimizing his life, isn't he?
Very much so. He's like the ultimate biohacker.
Ryan loves an ice bath, may have a giant freezer in your garage. Okay.
We do. We just purchased an infrared sauna. It's full on.
I'm coming to stay.
So, for sure. But yeah, we made a commitment that, you know, if you really sit with it, speaking about another person in a way that you wouldn't speak about them if they were in the room, there really is no point to that. It doesn't serve anyone except for our own egos in that moment.
Yes.
So the only reason we would say something about another person that is potentially hurtful or that we wouldn't say in front of them is to make ourselves feel better about ourselves.
And also it's kind of, I don't know about you, but I grew up with thinking that was how you connect with someone. You get together.
Make conversation.
Yeah. And it's acceptable. Mm. But the older I get, the more I realize, wow, that's a habit that needs to be broken.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's huge. And so we made a commitment that it was a scary one to commit to, that if we were to say something about someone that we wouldn't say to their face, we would have to punish ourselves in some way or another. And we don't have any huge vices, like we don't drink alcohol. There wasn't really anything other than giving up coffee that was really upsetting to myself. Ryan doesn't drink coffee. And so we actually said that if we would say something negative about someone else, we had to actually go to them and tell them what we said.
Wow. Such a big thing to commit to.
Yeah, it was huge and scary, but it was a really good practice of bringing, like, we would call each other forward and be like, wait, would you say that to them if they're in the
room?
And so before we got to that point, we would stop.
Yeah.
And we'd think, well, yeah, I wouldn't. I'm not going to say it, never mind.
And then I guess, it's mindfulness of going, I'm only saying that because it's going to make me feel better.
Yeah. In this now moment, but it doesn't really serve the humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, and if my kids were listening, I would want them to speak that way.
That's breaking the habit again, isn't it? And I have to ask, have you had to call anyone and confess?
Oh, I was just trying to
text message to let someone know.
No.
Okay.
We were really
so
really
pure.
I feel like maybe I might have said something about my sister, which was an easy one, because it was just a text and say, hey, ha ha ha, I said this about you, I've got to tell you. but I can't remember the details of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we were pretty good.
That's awesome. Mm. And it's something that you still?
Yeah, we do. It's hard.
Oh, I feel like we should put the challenge out there.
Let's do it.
I will commit. I will commit. Okay.
We set ourselves a time frame.
Oh, okay. That makes it better.
Of 6 months.
Okay.
6 months of this, of the actual punishment. And then from then we were like, let's hope that it's now an ingrained habit that we just don't habitually talk about others in a way that doesn't serve them or us.
Yes. So after the 6 month period, you don't have to go sending flowers for the awful things you're saying.
Exactly.
You would just forgive yourself and go, okay, you know what? I don't need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's big. So for those of you listening, if you love this idea and if you can commit to it, jump over to Amy's Instagram account and let her know that you're going to do it as well. And I will pledge to try my very best at doing this as well.
I would love that so much. And you can make your own punishment. It doesn't have to be that extreme.
That is pretty extreme.
It's pretty extreme. If you do have some kind of vice that you want to give up anyway,
yeah,
like drinking or coffee or whatever the thing is, maybe you could use that to start with.
Yeah, but I think that there's something really beautiful in the whole way of looking at it of going, if you wouldn't say it to their face,
don't say
why
it.
Are you saying it? Yeah.
And then really sit with that. Sit with the why. Why am I saying this? Really? Oh, because it makes me feel better about myself in this moment. Really? Why does that make me feel better? Because I don't feel enough.
Yeah.
I don't feel worthy.
And it's going to come back to your own judgments about yourself or your own core beliefs.
Yeah.
Which is just really big.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just really quickly on that note as well, evolutionarily, we've evolved as human beings to focus on, pay attention to, emphasize the negative before we move the positive. That's exactly what it is. And so our brains are like Velcro for the negative and like Teflon for the positive.
I've just spoken about off. This before. Do we have a predisposition to believe the negative to be true and to almost seek it, or not to almost, but to actually seek out the negative?
Yeah.
Because it's easier for our brains to process that.
Yeah.
We have a bias towards it.
Exactly.
The beautiful. Wild.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Mm. But the beautiful thing is that we're learning now through neuroscience that we can literally reprogram and restructure our brains to seek out and be like the Velcro for the positive as opposed to the negative.
Through routines like this. Yeah,
exactly. By practices like meditation, mindfulness, gratitude.
And just like, commitments.
Yeah, commitments to like that challenge that we just set now.
Yeah.
Helps to retrain the mind to look for the good as opposed to what we would habitually look for, potentially the bad, which we can't blame ourselves for.
Yeah, our brain does it. And it reminds me as well, I always try, and I don't always get it right, but I try to look for the innocence, you know, and that's something that I want to model for the kids as well is, you know, if a kid pushes in front of them in a lineup, rather than being like, that's a naughty kid, it's, you know what, maybe that kid is just so excited on the slide. Maybe it's their first time ever down a slide. Maybe they've never been in a lineup before.
Yes.
And framing things that way really pays off.
Yeah.
You know, even so much so that, again, driving in the car, you have amazing moments with your kids when they start talking and you're driving in the car. And, you know, I might say, oh my gosh, this car in front is so slow. And then one of them will pipe up and say something like, maybe it's their first time ever driving. And I'm like, oh, you little toads. Teaching me my own lessons. But that look for the, like, it's the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. There's always a rainbow in the storm. It's just like remembering that there is always good.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why people are the way that they are.
Yeah. And I can't think of who it was that said it, but it was in a podcast, very likely a Tim Ferriss podcast. And I honestly can't recall who he was interviewing, but the gentleman was saying that he always looks for the least creepy explanation, you know? And that's just it's seeing the innocence. It's big.
Yeah, it's huge. A really good practice.
Yeah, another good practice. All right. Well, I feel like we have covered so much this evening, and I really hope that for those of you listening, it's inspired you to commit to some new practices, whether it's your 10-minute meditation, your mindfulness, or punishing yourself when you speak out of turn. Whatever it is, I truly hope you've taken something from this conversation. For anyone who wants to learn more about you, Amy, where should they head?
Well, I do have a website. It's just lovefromamy.com.au. Put all my favourite things on there. Otherwise, Instagram really is my favourite place to hang out. And that is just @love_fromamy.
Beautiful. And I'll pop all of those details in the show notes as well. But a massive, massive thank you for sharing all of your wisdom with us this evening. And you're free to go to bed.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.